Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll follow the path of two Minnesota Marines through the first Gulf War, and we'll talk about a cash grant available to Minnesota troops just for serving. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. The goal is to raise public awareness about sexual violence and educate communities and individuals on how to prevent sexual violence. Statistics show that every 2 minutes another American is sexually assaulted. 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. In the Minnesota National Guard, we take sexual assault awareness very seriously. We started tracking reported cases of sexual assault in 2009. That year, 22 cases were reported. Since then, the number has risen, with 29 cases in 2010, 46 cases in 2011, and so far in 2012, we have 12 cases of sexual assault reported. The cases reported involve service members that are assaulted in a duty status or non-duty status, and the perpetrators can be military or civilian. The rise in reports show success in our sexual assault prevention and response program, and the comfort level in our organization to report assaults. Our sexual assault prevention and response program is built on the bedrock of Army values and the Air Force core values. It includes annual training for each and every one of our service members. Senior enlisted members and the commanders receive additional training and learn how to discuss this issue beyond their annual training. Our service members are told to intervene when they witness a high-risk situation where a possible sexual assault may occur. They're taught when to draw the line and to be able to say, that is not okay. In the Minnesota National Guard, we strive to reach our goal of eliminating sexual assault and sexual harassment. We realize the challenge is big. Nonetheless, we are working to create a climate that respects the dignity of every soldier and airman, civilian and family member, as well as those outside of our military community. Preventing sexual assault is everyone's duty.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now from the United States Marine Corps Reserve is retired Colonel Rod Gertis and Sergeant Major Dwayne Hauer. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning.
Colonel, can you give us a little background? I know the two of you served together in Desert Storm, but could you tell us a little bit about your military career, sir?
Sure. I got commissioned in our NROTC program at Iowa State University. And from there, I went on active duty and spent most of my time in active duty with on the West Coast at Camp Pendleton in Tank Battalion. And was platoon commander and a tow missile commander and battalion adjutant and a company executive officer. Then I left active duty and went in the reserves at the local unit here, the Marine Military Police Company. And there I was platoon commander and executive officer and was a commanding officer of that unit. And while I was a commanding officer, that's when we got activated for Gulf War I. And we took 141 Marines over in deployment for that. After that, I spent time at U.S. Central Command as enemy prisoner of war officer on staff down there. And after that, I basically went to Quantico and spent time in Quantico and also in Kansas City for some duties. And my last job before I retired out of the reserves was with the 24th Marine Regiment Kansas City as the chief of staff and sent individual contributors over to Iraq and then spent most of my time in Korea during that time. And I retired in 2005.
And Sergeant Major, you're still in the United States Marine Corps Reserve. Can you tell us a little bit about your career?
I am. I joined the Marine Corps in 1984. I did 4 years on active duty in the infantry, and from there got out, joined Military Police Company just before Desert Storm. Was in MP Company for about 15 years. Once I picked up first sergeant, I went back to the infantry, and now I'm currently serving as a sergeant major for Marine Wing Support Squadron 471 based here in Minneapolis.
Thanks, Sergeant Major. This is Minnesota Military Radio, and we're talking with two gentlemen from the United States Marine Corps Reserve, retired Colonel Rod Gertis and Sergeant Major Dwayne Hauer. Colonel, you and the Sergeant Major, he wasn't Sergeant Major then, but you served together in Desert Storm. Can you tell us how much lead time did we have, and when were you activated, and how soon were you over there?
Very interesting. We got notice, I think it was the week before Thanksgiving, and on the 1st of December, we were already at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, for our initial processing. So we had about a week's notice and spent a couple days here after that notice and headed out to Camp Lejeune with 141 Marines. And at that time, I think the Sergeant Major, you were Sergeant?
I was a Sergeant Squad Leader, yes.
And where'd you go from there, sir?
From Camp Lejeune, we were there approximately a month, and on New Year's Day, we ended up, we landed and put foot on turf in Saudi Arabia. So within a month, a little over a month, we went from being notified, going through Camp Lejeune, and actually being in Saudi Arabia preparing ourselves for the ground war.
So you were on the ground, Sergeant Major, for a couple of months before the actual attack.
We were. I mean, you have to, you know, be ready for everything. You've got different stages of the, you know, you get briefed. You know what you have to do. You go through rehearsals. And we gradually moved from south to north. And next thing you knew, we were at the border waiting for the sun to come up for that early morning departure.
What were the conditions on the ground?
Well, the ground, for instance, as you went north, you had to use a pick. There was no shoveling. You needed a pick. That was lots of gravel. You may as well just try to get through your driveway. It was pretty thick. But from there, it was, besides that, the weather was a little bit cloudy, overcast, and with all the oil fields burning, it was kind of a gloomy day for what that's worth.
The other interesting part is we basically slept under the stars, and we basically weren't in the barracks very long. We went out into the desert, you know, kind of the big sky, a little bullet theory, and slept under the stars. And for the first week or so, we were actually trying to stay warm. We actually had frost on some mornings, trying to sleep in our sleeping bags and getting rained on and getting wet. So it was actually a struggle till the time the ground war started, and it was getting to be the heat issues and dealing with the heat. So interesting process on that. And the other thing that's probably not known is around the whole border of Kuwait, it was a huge sand dune that had to be breached. So,
Colonel, during those 2 months, you were training and preparing and gathering up equipment and ammunition and so forth. Pretty busy days.
Exactly. We're getting all our logistics ready, getting all our vehicles issued, zeroing in our weapons and doing recons. And actually, part of our mission was also at the time when we were doing psychological warfare was bring an enemy prisoner of war across the border and then doing some interrogations, trying to find out and trying to gather intelligence prior to the ground war.
And Colonel, one last question before break. How many U.S. troops were in the area during those 2 months when you were preparing?
Oh, there were a lot of convoys in that. So basically the Marine Corps had two Marine divisions, 1st Marine Division, 2nd Marine Division, as well as air support and all logistical support. And the Army was involved also. They had several divisions over there. So I don't remember the exact number, but I'm sure it was over 100,000 if I recall correctly.
Thank you, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the 100-hour war that started on February 24th, 1991, with these two United States Marine Corps reservists. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're talking with two members of the United States Marine Corps Reserve, retired Colonel Rod Gertis and Sergeant Major Dwayne Hauer. Colonel Gertis, Desert Storm, February 24th, 1991. You're prepared and ready to go, and it's the day that you have to attack. Tell us about that day.
Yes, Tom. Our mission basically for the company was to guide the 2nd Marine Division up to the minefields. There was two belts of minefields, and we basically created six lanes in each of those belts. The interesting part is the Iraqis started burning the oil trenches, and the oil wells were burning also. They lit them up. So during that day, all the smoke and the smut from that increased, so we couldn't use our GPS system. So basically, we just did odometer and compass to get up to the minefields. An interesting part is since we have a lot of Marines to make all this guiding going on, we actually got innovative and we bought colored trash cans, trash barrels out in town and actually helped place those to guide all the vehicles up to the minefields for 2nd Marine Division. The interesting part was the general told us we probably had 100% chance of getting gassed with either mustard gas or nerve gas. But it was interesting because we were all in our gas masks and our charcoal MBC suits. And once we crossed the border going out, we found out that that morning, for the first time in the number of months we were there, the wind had shifted. The wind had shifted going out to the ocean. So if the Iraqis had decided to use chemical weapons, it would have blown right back over them. So for the Marines, we felt that that was a miracle that just had happened that morning. So over the next 4 days, my company processed over 10,000 prisoner of war. We call them enemy prisoner of war, EPWs. And it was interesting because of all that oil wells burning and the trenches burning, the visibility got black. Like in the middle of the day, it was like the middle of the night because of all the smut in the area. You had to have headlights on and trying to navigate through all that. So a lot of challenges for the Marines to get through that and make that all happen, and they just did an outstanding job. One story I'll say before I have the Sergeant Major speak is I heard the story of one of the battalion commanders that was captured, and he told one of my Marines, he said, you know, we fought the Iranians for 7 years, and every time they attacked, we'd back off, or every time we attacked, they'd back off. Everybody would retreat once there was fire, any combat that started. When the Marines came across the border, we shot at them, and they just kept coming. I told my soldiers to continue to fire, and he said the Marines just kept coming. He said that to his Marines or his soldiers three times, and he finally said, I guess we give up now, because he never saw anything like it of the tenacity of the Marines just charging through in the face of fire to overcome his soldiers there at that time. So we can be very, very proud of our Marine Corps and our Marines.
Sergeant Major, back to that morning, February 24th, now that we've heard from the colonel, tell us what really happened that morning.
Well, I definitely seen it from a different point of view, being a sergeant. And with my machine gun background, I was given a 50 cal, and I was in the top of a Humvee in the turret. And we started out, like the colonel said, with gas masks on. And as we passed people to get to the line of departure, we had our people looking at us with the gas masks on, wondering what was going on, if we knew something they didn't know. But, you know, we moved forward. We had, as the colonel mentioned, also with the trash cans, we had Marines in the back of Amtraks and with sandbags. They'd jump out of the Amtrak, throw the bucket down, throw the sandbag in it so it wouldn't blow away, and keep marking the minefield every couple hundred yards so that they could find their way in the correct lane. We had red, blue, and green buckets. So you had red one, red two, and so on and so forth. We were in red one, and we got there 0745, something like that. And by 08, well, we had a tank with us, and it hit a mine in the belt, blew the track, took some small arms fire. We turned on them, and they had their hands up in no time. They had given up. There was the tank crew and three of us MPs, and we had 93 prisoners by 08 that morning.
Speaking with the two Minnesota Marines about Desert Storm on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major, was, as I recall, a 100-hour war. Mm-hmm. Were you on the goal the whole time? Did you get any rest during that 100 hours?
Well, you don't think about rest. Of course, your adrenaline's pumping, and, you know, we've got those mop suits on, those chemical suits. You're just, you know, you put the water down, you're sweating it out as much as you can, or not much you can. It just, that's the way it is. And I think everybody's biggest concern is, well, what happens if we got to make a head call? Well, you sweated it all out. You weren't worried about that part of it. But, you know, going through that experience is, you know, something I'll never forget. And, you know, one of the things that was, as the colonel mentioned, with the giving up and surrendering, after everything was said and done and we cleared the, got the EPWs back to the other side of the minefield.
That'd be the prisoners.
Correct. We cleared the bunkers. Myself, the two MPs watched the EPWs, and myself and part of the tank crew cleared the bunkers. And in doing so, we found out that they had lots of ammunition, lots of weapons, and little to no food or clothing. So their morale was shot, and we continued on.
Colonel, this whole campaign went quickly, but towards the end of the 100 hours, you were up involved with the Republican Guard as well, weren't you?
Yeah, during the 4 days, we were collecting, but there was a lot of artillery still being delivered upon us. I know I got bracketed myself, but it was very thankful for our artillery units there because they could do counter-battery fire very quickly with the equipment we had, and that really saved us. So, yes, when we consolidated up there, that's when the Republican Guard was coming out of Kuwait City, and then the Marines and Tiger Brigade, the Army unit that was attached to us, took them out at that point. And that was basically what started the end of the war.
And that was quite a messy deal at the end, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And, Colonel, you went over there with 141 Marines. How many came home?
Tom, I got my prayers answered. I took 141 Marines over there, and I brought all 141 Marines back alive. And that was, I was been blessed.
Sergeant Major, that was a heck of 100 hours, and you got through it unscathed. That's terrific, isn't it?
Well, again, it's our blessings were answered, and, you know, you never know what to expect, but as in anything in the military, you hope for the best and expect the worst, and it worked out to our benefit.
And out of those 141 Marines, you're the only one that's still serving.
In the Marine Corps uniform, yes.
Well, hopefully the rest of them are still with us. Colonel, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you, you're president of the Minnesota Marine Corps Coordinating Council. Can you quickly tell us what that's about?
Yes, Tom, thanks. Yeah, we're a coordinating council that basically involves veterans from World War II to present day and includes the active duty and reserves, and we're a 501(c) tax-exempt organization. So our mission is to support the recruiters and also to support family members that have Marines deployed overseas. So we're a neat group. We meet the second Tuesday every month at, down at Fort Snelling, and if you're interested to look at us and find out more about us, we do have a website. And it's www.minnesotamarines.org. So please visit our website, and we have all our information on there.
Thank you, sir. Sergeant Major, quickly, any final thoughts on Desert Storm?
Oh, it's an experience that I'll never forget. And I think the lessons learned there have carried me through the additional combat tours I've had since then.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure having you in the studios today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
As retired Colonel Rod Gertis and Sergeant Major Dwayne Hauser from the United States Marine Corps Reserve. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and highlight a family programs volunteer who received national recognition from the National Guard Joint Family Program. In 2008, the National Guard Joint Family Program office began recognizing volunteers across the nation. Each year, 18 volunteers receive one of several awards for exceptional service to the family program. This year, two Minnesotans were recognized. Jerry Kane, a volunteer family readiness group leader at Camp Ripley, was this year's Extra Mile Award winner. The Extra Mile Award is presented to one Air and one Army retiree who distinguished themselves as outstanding volunteers. Jerry's nomination, submitted by the Battalion Family Readiness Support Assistant, spoke highly of Jerry. Jerry's dedicated, optimistic attitude has had a positive impact. He is able to keep the families engaged and close to the unit. This, in turn, has given a more positive outlook for families regarding the deployment. They feel close to the unit and their soldier. Therefore, families have shown even more support for the Minnesota National Guard. In addition to Jerry, Tammy Estes also received recognition. Tammy is the FRG leader in Albert Lea. She was presented the Region 5 Volunteer Award of the Year for exceptional service to the family program. Many thanks to the National Guard Joint Family Program for recognizing amazing volunteers across the nation as they go Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Find out how you can volunteer and support service members and their families across the state by clicking the Join a Yellow Ribbon Network in your area button at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll learn about a cash grant available to Minnesota troops just for serving. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. This message is to help employers recruit top-notch people. Did you know that only 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 qualify to be in the U.S. military? That's right, only 27% qualify to be in the U.S. military. One out of six veterans were on the front line. That means five out of six veterans worked in supply and support positions. The United States military is one of the best training institutions in the world. Our veterans have received excellent training on the latest supply and support technologies, the same supply and support know-how that is required to contribute to the success of a company. The words unselfish, technology talented, and policy discipline describe most of our veterans. If those words describe the type of person you're looking for, do what I did. Add to all your job postings and your website that you're a veteran-friendly employer and participate in the National Hire Vets First campaign. Thank you, veterans, and thank you, military families.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to talk about a cash grant available to Minnesota troops just for serving. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
today in the state of Minnesota, we pause and reflect on the sacrifices our Vietnam veterans have made to our country. Efforts continue on both the state and national level to designate March 30th as Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day. The proposal is in process of moving through both the House and Senate. March 30th was selected as it marks the day that the last Vietnam veteran came home. What's most remarkable is that in spite of the way Vietnam veterans were treated, they have led the way and continue to lead the way by ensuring our newest veterans receive the welcome home they deserve. Until March 30 is officially designated as Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day, we will continue to honor and thank our Vietnam veterans and all our veterans for their service each and every day.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Skip Krozik, a member of the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund and also the president and owner of Transport Distribution Services. Skip, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, thanks for having us.
Skip, we're going to talk about the MMAF today, but our listeners have heard me talk about the Minnesota Military Family Foundation a number of times because I'm on that board. And, of course, we both take care of troops. The Appreciation Fund takes care of the troops that serve, and the Family Foundation takes care of the families when they get into financial bind of one kind or another. Can you tell us a little bit about the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund? When were you started? What's your mission?
Well, we started about in 2004 with a conversation with Gene Sitt and General Vesey. And Gene, being a great immigrant who did well in America, wanted to do something for our nation's troops, particularly our Minnesota troops. They went back and forth on what can we do for our Minnesota troops, and he came up with starting an appreciation fund. Got together, and we put a group of us together and decided that we would give cash grants to Minnesota soldiers who have served in what the layperson would say, a combat zone since 9/11/01, of $500. And then if you were injured and got a Purple Heart, you'd get $2,000, and up to the extent of your injury, another up to $8,000, and then we would seek out the families of the KIAs and give them $5,000. It's a show appreciation for them to step up and serve in our military to take care of our freedoms in America.
Now, Skip, the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund is a 501c3?
You bet it is, and the big thing with Gene stepping up was how we got a lot of notice when we did our first public announcement in August of 2005. We had about a year of background work in it, laying the groundwork, the plans, what we're going to do, getting a list of early givers on to get people on board. But we got everyone's attention because Gene was good enough to put up the first $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that was got a lot of people's attention and got a lot of people to listen to us and realize that we had a commitment for this, that these men and women are serving, the hardships they go through, they and their families, and we just need to say thanks for them stepping up.
And unfortunately, he's no longer with us, is he?
Yeah, we lost Gene 3 years ago, and he is sadly missed. But his spirit lives on in our group. We're still running strong. Roger has taken it over, and we still have a dinner every year. Last year, we had Jack Jacobs, Congressional Medal of Honor recipient in Vietnam, come and speak. Year before that, Tom Brokaw. Year before that, Vince Flynn, then Tom Friedman Pryor, and Senator McCain Pryor. And now we're working on this year's speaker right now.
Now, you're a nonprofit, nonpartisan, nonpolitical, and how do you raise your funds?
We tell people just that. We're there to say thanks to the troops. 90 cents of every dollar goes to the troops. We keep all of our costs below 10%. We want to be able to tell people that 90 cents of every dollar they give goes directly to a Minnesota troop.
We're speaking with Skip Krozik, a board member of the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund on Minnesota Military Radio. Skip, you've been around quite a while. We've had a lot of troops serving the last 10 years, especially in Minnesota. How many recipients of these grants have there been?
Over 8,000 grants we've given out so far. I'm sorry, excuse me, 13,000 cash grants we've given out so far at over $8 million.
That's a lot of fundraising.
Well, we've just went over $13 million here at the end of last year, and we just hit our $8 million and 13,000 cash grants.
My goodness, that's a lot of money.
Interesting, this year, our fiscal year ends April 30th. This fiscal year, we'll be giving out over $1 million in grants. And this past month will be the busiest month we've had since 2007.
Skip, you must have events going all year long. How do you raise the money?
A few things happen. One, we raise it from our dinner, which we pick up around $500,000 a year. We have a number of groups that have partnered with us over the years. We do the Freedom Walk Run, which they raise around $10,000 to $15,000 for us. We have the Fagan Air Show out in Granite City, which raises around $20,000 for us. The Patriot Guard have been supporters of us since 06, and they give us approximately $50,000 a year for groups. It was important for Gene that our fundraising wasn't just about the big money givers to give us a big check. It was important for him that it was a citizen's effort from the citizens of Minnesota to help our citizen soldiers. Therefore, you can give through our website at www.mmaf.org and at any of the events we hold.
Ed, Skip, you must have, how many board members are there? And you must have a whole list of volunteers.
Well, we have, there's really three board members, a lot of board overseers, but we have a base core steering committee that kind of, I guess we call ourselves the workhorse for the organization that does all the planning, putting together the events, news releases, contacting past fund givers and future people who we think will want to give.
Once again, just to get back to the grants that you've given out, eligibility is Minnesota military?
Eligibility is you need to be part of a Minnesota Guard or Reserve unit or assigned to one. So you could actually be in Wisconsin citizen but assigned to a Minnesota Guard unit, and you would qualify. You need to, if you're active duty, you need to keep your Minnesota state residency. It's Minnesotans for Minnesotans, so if you're active duty and you switch your residency to Texas, you wouldn't qualify.
So all of the Guard troops that have served the many deployments in the last 10 years, 35 different countries, when they come back, what do they need to do? What do they do to get a grant?
Well, you need one grant for each deployment, one grant period, whether you have multiple deployments. In the case example would be the Air Force or something, they're flying over a hostile fire pay zone a few times a year, they could, so they could actually qualify for four. So we limit it to one for each deployment, for the deployment total. You go on the website, the application is all there. You need to just show your pay stub that shows you're in a hostile fire pay zone and your marching orders, et cetera, your TD-214s, and you're all set.
So the website again is mmaf.com.
www.org, Tom.
Excuse me, .org. MMAF.org. Skip, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I know you've got some events coming up. We want to talk about those and make sure that everyone knows a little better about what you do and how it all works. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'm talking to Skip Krawczyk, a board member of the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund, which provides grants to Minnesota military recipients. Skip, one more time, your website that I messed up is mmaf.org.
Correct.
And if we have a Minnesota Guard or Reservist who has served a deployment, they go to the website and they can apply for a grant. And if they've got copies of their orders or paychecks, it's all done.
Exactly. They're all right self-explanatory. Just click on the link.
And we've been talking a little bit about you're pretty busy with fundraisers all year round because you're giving away a lot of money. And what do you need? Do you need volunteers? Do you need money? How can the listeners help?
Well, the need's not going away. Our troops are still overseas. They're still in hostile fire pay zones. And even though we're bringing troops back, we're still sending more. So we see a need for a while. So funds, obviously, would be the first point of help. Other than that, send an email to our project director, Joe Bennick, and let him know that you'd like to volunteer or help out somewhere. You can get in through him to the website. He'd love to hear from you. When we have big events coming up, we always look for volunteers.
Once again, that's mmaf.org. Skip, you've got an event coming up on June 9th. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, we have our annual walk. What our walk is mainly for is to create a lot of awareness about the troops, the issues they go through when they're away, the family issues when they're away. We do a run walk. This year will be a great one. We're down at the Boy Scout base camp near Fort Snelling. We're having a sanctioned 10K run, a 5K run, and an approximately 2-mile walk. There'll be lunch there, live music. We start at 8 a.m. 8 a.m. registration, live music, 9 o'clock, the 5K and 10K run and 2-mile walk. 10 a.m., we have a program where we have we present some cash grants to current Minnesota service members, and we honor those killed in action, and it's just a great day.
And if there's any military members in Minnesota that want to participate, they do so for free?
All Minnesota military members participate for free.
And the rest of the walkers and runners pay an entry fee, which is part of how you raise some of your funds.
Right, $15, cover our costs for the food, beverage, band, all our ancillary costs. Most people give us everything either free or at cost. We got a nice sponsorship group. Anyone out there interested in sponsoring the event, they have a business or something that would like some publicity, we'd love to hear from them also through the website.
And this isn't your first year for this event. How many people came last year?
We had about 1,100 runner walkers, another probably 100, 150 volunteers, and probably around another 50 to 100 just people that came and showed up.
Well, I hope you get some good weather for it and you have a great event.
We've had good weather every year, and we plan on continuing that, Tom.
And if our listeners want to participate, how do they register?
Just go online, and the registration's right online. Again, everything's set up so that we can do it easy, mmaf.org.
And Skip, I think the next week after that, June 16th, there's a big ride coming up too, isn't there?
Yeah, Patriot Guard, who does a great job of helping support us, they raise a substantial amount of money on their ride. And we've been fortunate that they teamed up with us in 06, I believe it was, and we've been a recipient of a lot of their funds every year. They do a terrific job, a great group of people, and we're glad to be partners with them.
They go on hundreds of important missions every year, and they also raise money and help support the MMAF as well as the MMFF, the Family Foundation. Doug Bly and the writers are fantastic, aren't they?
You bet. Just a great group of people.
Great group. Skip, we're running out of time. Final thoughts about the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund?
Just keep all those troops in your hearts and minds, and when you see one, thank them. And if you got some extra time or money, go to that website, mmaf.org.
Skip, you and your board are doing some great work. Thanks for everything you're doing to support our troops.
Yep, thanks for having us here, Tom.
So that was Skip Krozik from the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining us now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Doug Bly. Doug, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for the opportunity.
Doug, we've been following the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team for a long time now, and they've been over in Kuwait. We took the show over there last November, and your Patriot Guard riders saw them off in fine fashion. They're about to come home. What's your plan?
Well, you know, Tom, we like to bring them home just like we send them off. Our expectations right now, we're working with Brigade Command. We have been invited to participate in their return, so really two different things we do, Tom. The first one is, the most important thing, is at the armories we'll be setting up flag lines. So as the bus pulls in, we'll have our members putting a flag line out. So as the bus comes in, that's the first thing they see. Is the last thing they saw on the way out is the first thing they see getting home. The second part is that we actually will participate in a moving escort of all the buses from where they enter Minnesota back again, and we take them all the way back to their home armories. They're never out of our sight, so to speak. As soon as they get out onto those buses. When they deployed, we actually took them, rode them all the way down to Fort McCoy, and we estimated we probably, with all the escorts, rode about 20,000 to 30,000 miles. So we're expecting the same sort of thing, but it's an honor, Tom. You know, I've been on some of those escorts, and you look in the mirror and you see the smile on those faces when they hit that state line, and it's an honor to be part of that.
Doug, we've heard over and over again in interviews of deployed troops that how important it was for you to be there in the middle of the night when they left and to be there when they came home. And it's one of those things, again, you have to be there and you have to see it. It's moving, and the troops remember.
Yeah, and it's such a feeling. And, you know, it's, again, I'll go back to a couple of years ago when we took them down to Fort McCoy. It's a very bittersweet feeling when you turn off and the bus continues on to that base, and no, you're not going to see them and the risk that they're undergoing on behalf of our freedoms. And certainly the returns is just a big smile on everybody's face. And it just kind of closes the loop for them, and it closes that loop for us to be part of that. And, you know, the show of support from the civilians, and, you know, it's not just the Patriot Guard involved in this. As we pull into these small towns, all the town members are there. You know, the streets are lined up with flags. From beginning to end in these small towns, and the feeling and the support that our Minnesota National Guard gets for Minnesotans, it's bar none the best in the country. And I'm just, you know, proud of everybody here for what we do for these men and women.
It's very important, Doug. And for our listeners, if they want to be a part of that, who's eligible to become a Patriot Guard rider?
Well, absolutely. Everybody and anybody, Tom, who's got a desire to do so. It's, you don't do not have to be a veteran, and you do not have to have a motorcycle. All you have to do is go to our website, www.mnpatriotguard.org, all one word, and click join us with a zip code and an email address. You become part of the communication systems, and all you have to do is have a 3x5 United States flag on a pole that you can hold, and everyone's welcome to participate in not just the funerals we do, but these welcome homes. And, you know, we'd love to see, you know, 100,000 people across the state standing in that flag line with us, Tom.
I think it's more than that, Doug. It's a flag and a pole and a good heart.
Roger that. Thank you for correcting me, Tom.
We're just about out of time, but you've got your annual ride coming up. When is it?
We do June 16th, the Patriot Ride, www.patriotride.org. And it's an awesome day of 3,000 motorcycles saying we love each other. Everybody's wearing a uniform, and everybody did wear a uniform.
We hope you get a great weather day that day. And, Doug, thanks to you and all the Patriot Guard riders.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Skip Krozik from the MMAF, retired Colonel Rod Gertis, Sergeant Major Dwayne Hauer, Commissioner Larry Shelado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we hear how music is helping our troops through deployments, and we'll take a look at a serious problem affecting today's force. That's next Sunday morning at 7 or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.